back and forth before my mother, stopping occasionally to glare out the small porthole window. The sea outside has turned blood red, a bad omen. I feel a familiar itch and make a mental note to pray later on, in the swan's small shrine. It might bring me a bit of peace. "Be still. Conserve your strength," Mother says, her Lakelander melodic and fluid. She sits with her legs drawn up under herself, and her long-sleeved coat is tossed aside, making her seem smaller than usual. It has little effect on her bearing, and I feel the weight of her eyes as I walk. I am a queen too, and hesitate to follow her commands, if only to be contrarian. But she's right. I eventually concede and take a seat on the bench on the opposite wall, an uncomfortable thing with thin padding and rivets fixed to the metal floor. My fingers curl around the edge of it, gripping tight. It vibrates with the reverberations of the ship engines, low and humming. I fixate on the sensation, reclaiming a bit of my calm. "In your communications, you said there was something you couldn't tell me," Mother says. "Not until we were face to face." Steeling myself, I look up at her. "Yes."
"Well?"
She spreads her hands wide. "Here we are." My expression doesn't change, but I feel my heartbeat quicken with nerves. I have to get up again and cross to the window, look out on the crimson waters. Even though my mother's room is the safest place for me, it still feels dangerous to repeat what I know. Anyone could be listening, waiting to report back to Maven. I put my back to her and force out the words. "We're operating on the assumption that Maven will win." She scoffs behind me.
"Win this war, you mean, but not the next."
"Our war for this country."
"Yes,"
I reply. "But I think we're on the losing side now. His brother's coalition, that Montfort army." Her voice is level, devoid of judgment.
"They frighten you."
I spin around, scowling.
"Of course they frighten me. And the Scarlet Guard, too. Reds?"
Mother scoffs. She even rolls her eyes. I grit my teeth against a sigh of frustration.
"They're of little importance."
"That kind of thinking will be our ruin, Mother," I tell her as sternly as I can, one queen to another. "Listen to me." But she dismisses me with a dancing wave, as if I'm still a child pulling at her skirts.
"I doubt that," she says. "Silver's war, not Red's. They can't possibly hope to win against us."
"And yet they keep doing it," I answer flatly. "I fought in Harbor Bay against the Samos Heirs and their battalion. Populated by Silvers and Newbloods mostly, but Reds too. Skilled snipers, trained fighters. Not to mention Norta's own Red soldiers who turned. One of Maven's great strengths lies in the loyalty of his people, but if it wanes, his Silvers will run and leave him empty."
Mother just clucks her tongue. My teeth clench with the sound. "The Reds keep winning because of the Silver Alliance," she says. "It will quickly crumble when one or both of the Kalor brothers die."
Wincing, I try another tactic. Instead of standing tall, I drop to my knees in front of my mother, taking her hands in mine. The pleading image of a child is sure to stir her. "I know, Mare Barrow Mother," I tell her, hoping she hears me. "Reds are made of stronger stuff than we realize. Yes, we make them think themselves inferior, insignificant, to keep them controlled. But we risk falling into our own trap if we forget to fear them too." My words fall on deaf ears. She pulls one hand away, using it to smooth my hair away from my face.
"Mare Barrow isn't Red, Iris."
"Her blood certainly is," I think, keeping the retort to myself. Mother continues to run her fingers through my hair, combing out the strands.
"All will be well. All will be taken care of," she croons, as if to soothe a baby. "We'll drown our enemies and return to our peace, safe at home. The glory of the Lakelands will wash forth to this very coast, across prairie, into those infernal mountains, to the borders of Ciron and Tyraxis, and Piedmont, too. Your sister will rule an empire with you at her side. I try to imagine what she dreams of. A map awash in blue, our dynasty secure in power. I think of Teora, tall against a new dawn, an empress's crown upon her head. Resplendent in sapphire and diamond, the most powerful person from shore to shore, the world kneeling at her feet. I want that future for her. I want that sanctuary so much my heart aches. But will it ever come to pass? Annabelle Lirilan and Julian Jacobs have given me a message, I whisper, moving my head close to Mother's. If someone is listening at the door, they won't hear much. What? She hisses back, surprised. Her soothing hand drops. The other tightens its grip on me. They came to me in Archeon. The capital? How? Like I said, Mother, I murmur. I think Maven will lose this war, and lose quicker than we can imagine. They are a formidable alliance, stronger than our own, even with Piedmont on our side. Her eyes widen, and I finally see a flash of fear. As much as it terrifies me, I'm glad for it. We all need to be afraid if we want to stay alive. What did they want? She asks. They offered a deal. Mother's expression sours a little. Her lips twist. We don't have time for dramatics, Iris. Tell me what happened. They were waiting in my transport, I say. The Jacos singer is a talented one, and he bewitched my guards well. And the Lirilan Queen is as dangerous as any. Her voice climbs an octave, panicked. Does anyone know? Does Maven? I put a hand to her face, forcing her to quiet. The words die on her lips. I'd be dead if he knew. Her skin is warm beneath my hand, soft and more wrinkled than ever before. These days have aged her. Annabelle and Julian did their work well. They need me alive, and they took no chances. Mother sighs in relief, her breath washing over my face. Salin Iral, I spit, almost unable to say the name of my father's killer. It cuts us both like a dagger. Mother recoils, disgust marring her features. They'll hand him over. Let us do with him what we wish. Her eyes go blank and dark. After a moment, she pushes away my hand gently. Iral is no one. A disgraced lord, stripped of his power. Alone in whatever wilderness he chooses. Electric anger screams down my spine. I feel myself flush, heat burning my cheeks. He killed Father. Thank you for the clarification, Mother replies, her voice icy. Still that blankness in her, a shield against the agony of my father's loss. I was not aware. I only meant he killed your father for another king, she says slowly. He is no one, Iris. Maybe. On shaky limbs, I force myself to my feet. I loom over her, and she has to look up to see my face. An odd position, an odd sensation, to have this power over my mother, even a power so small. I suck in another breath. Annabelle offered up Volos Samos as well. Below me, she blinks. Eyelids closing and opening, revealing a very different pair of eyes. They spark, alight. Now, that is something interesting. And perhaps impossible. I remember Annabelle as she leaned forward, bronze eyes gleaming in the light of afternoon. There was no lie in her, only hunger, only need. I don't think so. What do they want in return? Shaking, I tell her. Let her make this decision for me, because I cannot make it myself.
Tiberius, the seventh rightful king of Norta, Flame of the North, alongside his allies, the Free Republic of Montfort, the Scarlet Guard, and the Independent Kingdom of the Rift, sends word from his temporary capital of Harbor Bay.
The sentinel reads from the neatly typed communication, his voice a bit muffled behind his jeweled mask. The floodlights of the ship deck illuminate him in blinding red and orange. Behind him, there is only darkness. No stars, no moon. The whole world could be empty.
Temporary. That's presumptuous, Mother sniffs, turning her face into the cool wind blowing off the black ocean.
We exchange glances, annoyed by the pageantry.
Flame of the North, what nonsense. That's Cal, Maven replies from his place among his guards.
He called us to hear the message ourselves, summoning us to his ship.
He is a creature of want.
With a raised finger, he indicates for the stocky sentinel to continue. I recognize his voice and the eyes peering out from his mask. A vibrant blue, made electric by the sharp light overhead. Haven, I know. Remembering the guard who accompanied me on my journey to Montfort.
I control the city behind you, he reads.
I think of the older brother, the warrior, wreathed in flame.
I control the southern borders from Delphi to our allies in the Rift. I control hundreds of miles of coastline. The entirety of the Beacon region, led by Governor Rombos and his house, has pledged loyalty to the true king. I have this kingdom in my fist, Maven, and you within my grasp.
Did we know about Rombos? I glance across the deck, looking to my twisted husband. Maven's deep scowl is confirmation enough. That betrayal is a surprise. Maven barely responds to the sentinel's words, only hissing out a breath.
Traitor.
I think I hear him mutter. Sentinel Haven forges on.
You have allies beyond your borders, Maven, but few within them. None who will not abandon you as my victories mount. The winds are blowing, the tide is changing. Norta cannot exist as she did beneath our ancestors. And I will not rest until I reclaim the birthright you stole from me, at the cost of our father's life.
The guards rustle a little, but none of them speak. To them, this could be the wild accusation of a traitor, as Maven has painted his brother to be. Seduced by a red freak, manipulated into corruption and murder. But it's probably more likely a confirmation of what we all know to be true. Tiberius Calor did not kill his father, not willingly, not the way Maven has said. Next to me, Mother fixes her eyes on my husband. They gleam, catching the harsh light. He doesn't react, still and smooth as glass. In his black uniform, his body seems to blend into the darkness, invisible but for his white face and long-fingered hands. Despite his brother's best attempts, Maven stays collected, reluctant to give over to a fiery temper.
We are prepared to offer terms to all members of your alliance.
Sentinel Haven rustles the page as he reads.
To Her Majesty Queen Senra of the Lakelands and His Highness Prince Bracken of Piedmont. To you, Maven, usurper and murderer though you may be. No more blood need be spilled in this war of ours. Let us preserve what we can of the kingdom we were born to serve.
Such charming words. I wonder if it was written by committee. Annabelle, at least, had a controlling hand in the communication. Her fingerprints are all over the statement.
We will meet upon the island of your choosing.
Sentinel Haven clears his throat, his eyes flicking to me first. Then to his king, a person living on borrowed time upon a stolen throne.
At dawn.
We wait in silence, watching Maven as he weighs his options. He knew this was coming, and is hardly surprised. Still, he snaps, slowly at first, then faster and faster. A clenching fist, the flame-maker bracelet spinning on a fine-boned wrist. It spits a spark that blooms, growing, a fireball burning white-hot and icy blue at its core. With a manic smile, Maven tosses it out onto the water. It trails, a near comet, reflecting with a hellish glow in the choppy water, before he lets it hiss into the nothing among the waves.
Dawn, then,
he repeats. I can tell by the set of his shoulders that he has no intention of negotiating. I can only guess as to his motive. But I think it rests solely on one silver prince and one red lightning girl.
23. Cal. I shift, uncomfortable as the minutes wear on. Midnight comes and goes. Only her eyes move, skimming the page with blurring speed. She might have it memorized by now. Mare wanted no part of the message to Maven, remaining in my rooms while the rest of us crafted it. I expected her to be gone when I came back. But she stayed. I still can't believe what happened. And I still can't believe she's sitting here, on my bed, in the middle of the night. After all that's passed between us. She stayed. I've given up focusing on the papers in front of me. Counts, mostly. Of soldiers, civilians, casualties, resources. Enough to make my head spin. Julian is better at deciphering all this, reducing everything to the most important details so I can see the larger picture. But I need the distraction. If only to keep me from the haunting little book in the desk drawer. I almost want to tell Julian to take it back. Keep his so-called gift until this war is won and I actually have the capacity to face what he wants me to face. Norda's situation requires my attention, not the book. And our situation is dire. Harbor Bay is ours, but it's a poor capital. The city is too old and vulnerable from all sides, and with Fort Patriot under repair, we'll have to build up new defenses for the time being. At least the city is with us, if only in name. Rombos surrendered, and the Reds of the Bay willingly follow their own leaders, the Red Watch, who are firmly allied to the Scarlet Guard. I tick off each group in my head, running down the endless list always racing through my brain. At this point, I think I even see it in my sleep. With a sigh, I try to clear my mind. I focus on her instead. Strange that she is both the anchor against the storm and the storm itself. Mare sits cross-legged on my bed, her head bent so her hair obscures half her face. The gray ends are creeping through the chocolate brown, dusting up against her collarbone. She keeps my night robe pulled tight around herself, the collar high enough to hide the brand on her skin. I shudder every time I see the mark burned into her and remember that my brother put it there. In the shifting candlelight, she looks like flame. Golden red, with black shadows dancing at her edges. I watch quietly from my desk, one barefoot planted on the floor, the other on the desktop. My calf twinges, still aching from the battle, and I flex my toes, trying to work out some of the pain. I wish I hadn't sent the healer away earlier, but it's too late in the evening to call anyone back. I'll just have to bear it until morning, along with the other small pains still cropping up whenever I move.
How long has it been?
She murmurs again, still not looking away from the page. I lean back in my chair a little and huff at the ornate ceiling. The electric chandelier above me is dark, unlit. It sparked out about an hour ago when Mare decided to furiously pace the room. Her moods have a trembling effect. 20 minutes since you last asked, I reply. I told you, Maven's taking his time with a response. He wants to make us sweat.
But it won't be much longer,
she says, unmoving.
He doesn't have that kind of restraint. Not with us. He won't be able to resist the chance of meeting us face to face.
Especially you, I growl.
And you,
she replies with equal fervor.
His mother poisoned him toward us both, made the obsession he carries now.
Annoyed, she sighs.
The meeting will be pointless. A waste.
I blink slowly. Her knowledge of my brother and how he thinks unsettles me. Mostly because I know what a high price she paid for it. And, if I'm being honest, because I know it's rooted in emotions I don't want to trace. But who am I to judge what she feels? I still love Maven too, or at least, I love the person I thought my brother was. What a mess. Both of us. My knee cracks as I draw back my leg, an echoing snap. Wincing, I massage the joint, letting my hands warm to a soothing temperature. The heat sinks in, relaxing the muscles beneath. Mare finally looks up, smirking as she tosses her hair back.
You sound like a creaky door.
I hiss out a pained laugh. Feel like one.
See a healer in the morning.
Despite the playful twist of her lips, I hear her concern all the same. Her eyes narrow, looking darker in the dim light.
Or send for Sarah. She'll come now if you want. I don't think she or Julian will sleep until we get an answer.
I shake my head and heave myself out of the chair. I'll bother them tomorrow, I say, taking even steps toward the bed. Every foot closer seems to tighten my muscles with a different kind of ache. She tracks me like a cat as I ease down next to her, lying back on my elbows. An ocean breeze rolls in at the window, billowing the golden curtains with an invisible hand. We both shudder. Slowly, I take the letter from her hand, put it to the side without breaking our stare. I dread these quiet moments. And I think she does too. The silence, the empty waiting, makes it impossible to ignore exactly what we're doing, or not doing, rather. No change has been made on either side, in her heart or in mine. No choice reversed. But every passing second makes my decision more difficult as I'm reminded of what I'm going to lose when the time comes. What I lost for so many weeks. Not just her love, but her voice, her sharpness, the push and pull of a person who has no regard for my blood or my crown. Someone who sees me and no one else in my place. Someone who calls me Cal and not Tiberius. Mare puts a hand to my cheek, splaying her fingers behind my ear. She is more tentative than before, more clinical, like a healer examining a wound. I lean into the touch a little, chasing the cooling feel of her skin. Are you going to tell me this is the last time? I ask, looking up at her. Her expression melts a bit, as if wiped clean, but her eyes don't waver.
Again?
I nod against her hand.
This is the last time,
she says flatly. I feel a hum deep in my chest. My fire roars in response, begging to burn free. Are you lying?
Again?
Her lips twitch as I run a hand the length of her leg, from ankle to hip. The fingers on my face trace a gentle path as I bob my head, feeling my own blood heat. Mare's response is quiet, barely more than a gasp.
I hope so.
She stops me before I can say anything else. Her kiss devours. No choice is made. Again. Mare is dressed, perched precariously in the open window, when someone knocks on the bedroom door, waking me. I half expect her to duck out and disappear into the night air, but instead she pulls back inside. Her face flushes, and she tosses me my robe. I get a face full of silk. Staying put? I ask, low enough so the person in the adjoining chamber won't hear. You don't have to. She just glares at me.
What's the point? Everyone will know soon enough.
Know what exactly, I want to ask, but I hold my tongue. Stretching, I stand from the bed and pull the robe tight, knotting it at my waist. She watches as I move, eyes trailing. What? I whisper, sporting a half-grin. Instead, her lips press into a thin line.
You had some scars removed.
I can only shrug. It's been weeks since I had a healer erase the older scars across my back and ribs, wiping away the raised edges of white, knotted flesh. Wounds unbecoming of a king. I'm a bit flattered she remembered enough to know. Some things don't have to be held on to. Her eyes narrow.
And some things do, Cal.
I can only nod in silent agreement, unwilling to follow her over the precipice of that particular conversation. It won't lead us anywhere productive. Mare settles against my desk, leaning a bit, squaring herself to the door. Her countenance changes, her eyes sharpening as the rest of her seems to harden into a different person. A bit of Marina, the silver she pretended to be. A bit of the Lightning Girl, all sparks and merciless fury. With herself in between, the girl I'm still figuring out. She ducks her chin, nodding at me. As I open the door, I can just hear her suck in a fortifying breath. Julian, I say, moving aside to let my uncle into the room. He takes a step forward, already talking, a faded sweater tossed over his nightclothes. The page in his hand has very little writing on it. We've received Maven's reply, he says. He falters only a little at the sight of Mare, doing his best not to let her break his momentum. He clears his throat a little and forces a casual smile. Good evening, Mare.
Good morning would be more appropriate, Julian,
she says, dipping her head in greeting. Unwilling to give anything more or anything less. But our appearance says enough. Her with still disheveled hair, and me in nothing but a robe. Julian reads us as easily as he does his books. At least he has the good sense not to comment, or even smirk. I prod him farther into the room. What did Maven say?
As we suspected, he replies, recovering. He agreed. Dawn.
Already I curse my decision to meet so early. I'd much rather do this on a full night's rest. But it's best to get it over with as soon as possible.
Where?
Mare's voice is ragged. Julian looks between us.
They've chosen Province Island. Not exactly neutral, but most of the islanders have gone, fleeing the war.
I fold my arms across my chest and try to picture the island in question. It comes to me quickly. Province is the northernmost point of land in the Barn Islands, sprinkled in a hook off the coast. It's a little like Tuck, the Scarlet Guard base. Home to little more than disappearing dunes and seagrass. It's Rombo's territory, and small enough. If anything, this is in our favor. At the desk, Mare scoffs. She surveys Julian and me like children.
Unless House Rombos decides to betray you.
I'd be inclined to agree if his family didn't hang in the balance, or his own life. Lord Rombos won't risk either, I tell her. Province Island will do. She doesn't look convinced, but nods anyway. Her eyes pass to Julian, then to the single paper in his hand. The copy of Maven's response.
Did he have any other demands?
Julian shakes his head.
None.
May I see it?
She holds out a hand in gentle request, palm turned upward. Julian is happy to oblige. For a second she hesitates, gripping the paper between her thumb and forefinger like something unclean. He used to write her letters, back when we were operating from the Notch, collecting new bloods. He used to leave them on the corpses of the ones he got to first. Each one begged her to return, promising to stop the bloodshed if she went back. Eventually he got his wish. I would take the paper from her, protect her from the pain his words bring. But she doesn't need me to shield her. She's faced worse without me. Finally, she blinks, steeling herself to read Maven's response. Her frown only deepens as her eyes scan the words, over and over again. I glance at Julian. Has Nanavel been informed? She has, he says. Does she have thoughts? When doesn't she? I offer him a wry smile. True. Julian and my grandmother aren't exactly the closest of friends, but they're certainly allies, at least where I am concerned. Their shared history, my mother, is enough for them both. At the thought, I feel a sudden cold, and I can't help but look at my desk drawer. It's firmly shut, the book out of sight, but never far from my mind. Ocean Hill was my mother's favorite palace, and I see her everywhere, even though I have no memory of her face. Only what I've seen in pictures or paintings. I've asked for some of her portraits to be rehung, at least in the salon outside my bedroom. Her colors were gold, more vibrant than the yellows Julian wears now. Fitting a queen born of a high house, though she was far from the norm. She slept in this room. She breathed this air. She was alive here. Julian's voice snaps me out of the quicksand of my mother's memory. Queen Annabelle thinks you should send someone in your stead, he says. A corner of my mouth tugs into a half-smile. I'm sure she suggested herself. His face mirrors mine. She did. I'll thank her for the suggestion and politely decline. If anyone is going to face him, it should be me. I'll present our terms.
Maven won't bargain.
Mare's fist closes, crumpling a bit of the communication. Her gaze feels like her kiss. Devouring. He agreed to the meeting, Julian begins, but she cuts him off.
And that's all he'll agree to. This isn't to discuss terms. He isn't anywhere close to surrender.
I hold her livid stare, watching the storm in her eyes. I almost expect a peal of thunder overhead.
He just wants to see us. It's his way.
To my surprise, Julian takes a hurried step toward her. His face pales, draining of color. We should still try, he pleads, exasperated. She just blinks at him.
And torture ourselves? Give him the satisfaction?
I respond before Julian can. Of course we're going to meet with him. My voice deepens, heavier than before. And of course he isn't going to bargain.
So why do this?
Mare spits. I'm reminded of one of Laurentia Viper's snakes. Because, I mutter, trying not to growl, to keep some semblance of control and dignity. I want to see him too. I want to look into his eyes and know that my brother is gone forever. Neither Julian nor Mare, two of the most talkative people I know, has any response to give. She looks at her feet, brows knitting together, while a red bloom rises in her cheeks. It could be shame or frustration, or both. Julian only goes paler, white as a sheet. He avoids my eyes. I have to know that whatever his mother did to him cannot be reversed. I need to be sure, I murmur, moving closer to Mare. If only to calm myself. I'm suddenly aware of the cloying heat in the room, rising with my own temper. Thank you, Julian, I add, trying to dismiss him as gently as I can. He takes the hint well. Of course, he replies, bowing his head. Even though I've repeatedly asked him never to bow to me. Have you, he adds, stumbling over the question, have you read what I gave you? The pain of another person lost flares in my chest. My eyes dart to the desk drawer again. Mare follows my line of sight, even though she doesn't know what we're talking about. I'll tell her later, at a better time. Some, I manage to say. Julian looks almost disappointed. It isn't easy. No, it isn't, Julian. I'm done talking about this. And if you could, I mumble, gesturing feebly between myself and Mare to change the subject. You know. Mare snickers slightly, but Julian is happy to comply. I don't know what you're talking about, he says with an easy grin. As he goes, stepping back out into the salon, I follow his retreating figure. When he passes the painting, propped up against a chair for now, he slows. But he doesn't stop. He only trails a hand along the frame, unable to spare a glance for his sister. They have a similar look, based on the portrait. The thin chestnut hair and inquisitive eyes. She was simple, an easy beauty. The kind most overlook. I don't have much of her in me, if anything at all. I wish I did. The door swings shut, removing her and my uncle from sight. Slowly, smooth fingers weave into mine, taking my hand.
He can't be fixed,
Mare breathes, resting her chin against my shoulder. Not quite on top of it, she can't reach, but now isn't the time to tease her. Instead, I lean down into her grasp, making it easier on us both. I need to see for myself. If I'm going to give up on him, her grip tightens sharply.
There's no giving up against the impossible.
The impossible. Part of me still refuses to believe that. My brother is not a lost cause. He can't be. I won't allow it. Davidson tried, I whisper, reluctant to say the words out loud, but I have to. I have to make them real. He searched. There are no new blood whispers. She takes a long, trailing breath.
And that's probably for the best,
she says after a moment.
In the grand scheme of the world.
It stings to know she's right. Methodic, she puts her hands on my shoulders, steering me away from the desk. Away from the memory sitting in a drawer.
You should sleep,
she says firmly, pushing at the bed.
Maven wears exhaustion better than you do.
I stifle a yawn, eager to follow her commands. With a sigh, I slip between the blankets. When my head hits the pillow, I almost drop asleep instantly. Will you stay? I mumble, watching her through slitted eyes. She crawls over to me in reply, kicking off her boots as she goes. She worms her way under the silk. I watch her, smirking. And she shrugs.
Everyone will know anyway.
Without thought, I take her hand, knitting our fingers at the hem of the blanket. Julian can keep a secret. Mare barks out a laugh.
Evangeline can't. Not with her agenda.
I have to chuckle too, half-hearted in my exhaustion. Whoever thought she'd be the one pushing us at each other? Next to me, she shifts, trying to get comfortable. Eventually, she settles on curling up at my side, one leg kicked free.
Even though Maven can't change, other people can,
she mumbles against my chest. The vibrations of her voice make me shiver. It takes little concentration to douse the candles burning all over the room, plunging us both into a gentle blue darkness. I don't want to marry her.
That's never been my issue.
I know that, I whisper. It isn't in me to give her what she wants. Not when it means betraying my father, my birthright, and any chance I may have at making some kind of difference. She might not agree, but I can do more on a throne, with a crown, than I can without them. After the parley, I breathe, hesitant. Once Harbor Bay is secure, I think we hit Greytown next. Full strength. We won't catch another tech slum off guard. Not after Newtown. In the darkness, the brush of her lips on mine takes me off guard. I jump at the sensation. I feel her smile against my skin.
Thank you,
she whispers, shifting back into place. It's the right thing to do. But am I doing it for the wrong reason? For her? Does that even matter?
What did Julian give you?
She mumbles, half asleep. Mare is just as tired as I am, if not more. The day has been too long and too bloody. I blink in the darkness, staring at nothing. Her breathing slows and evens as she drifts away. She's asleep when I finally answer. A copy of my mother's diary.
24. Mare. It's still dark outside when I wake, roused by shuffling across the room. I tense on instinct, ready to fight. For a second, I'm puzzled by the sight of Cal in the same chamber as me. Then I remember the events of yesterday, his near death, and the way it broke us both, shattering whatever resolve we'd had before. He's already dressed, looking regal, in the soft light of a few candles. I watch for a second, seeing him without any kind of mask or shield. Despite his broad, tall form, he looks younger in his fine clothing. His jacket is a deep blood red, trimmed in black, with silver buttons at the cuffs. The pants match, tucked into oiled leather boots. He hasn't donned a cape or a crown yet, leaving both discarded on his desk. He moves slowly, fastening the buttons up his throat. Shadows ring his eyes. He looks more exhausted than he did last night, if that's possible. I wonder if he slept at all, or if he spent the night tortured by the prospect of seeing Maven again. When he realizes I'm awake, he straightens, shoulders squaring toward me. He fills the kingly mold quickly. The transformation is small, but unmistakable. He puts up his guard, puts on a mask, even with me. I wish he wouldn't, but I understand why. I do it too. We leave in an hour, he says, finishing with his buttons. I've had some clothes brought into the salon for you. Choose whatever you like, or... He stumbles, as if he said something wrong. Whatever you want from your own wardrobe. I didn't exactly bring my wardrobe to a battle, and I don't think I can fit into one of your uniforms, I reply, chuckling a little. With a reluctant groan, I stretch out of the blankets and shudder at the touch of cold air. I sit up, intensely aware of the tangled braid over my shoulder. I'll find something. Should I look a certain way? A muscle feathers in his cheek. However you wish, he says, his voice oddly strained. Should I be distracting? I ask, gingerly trying to work the knots out of my hair. He looks at my fingers, not at me. I think you'll be distracting no matter what you wear. My chest tightens with warmth. Flattery will get you nowhere, Cal. But he isn't wrong. It's been months since I last saw Maven in the flesh, his form retreating through the surge of a panicked crowd. Iris ran with him, defending her new husband from the attack on their wedding in the capital. It was a rescue mission, not just for me, but for dozens of new bloods manipulated into his service. I could wear a potato sack, and Maven would still devour me with his eyes. Yawning, I pad across the room and into the bathroom for a quick, blistering hot shower. Part of me wishes Cal would join in, but he stays behind, and I scrub the last of my aches away alone. After, I enter the salon to find a rainbow in the semi-darkness. With a slight burst of concentration, I make the electric lights flicker to life overhead, illuminating the chamber full of various garments. I'm glad for the wide choice of clothing, but even more grateful for the emptiness of the salon. No maids to attend to my hair and face, no healers to work away the gnawing exhaustion or liven up my body. I'm given only what I need and exactly what I want. If only Cal could do that in all things. I try not to think beyond this morning. He still hasn't turned away from the crown, and I am still just as dedicated to my cause, if not more so. I can't still be in love with a king when everything I'm doing is to destroy his throne. Destroy all notions of kings and queens and the kingdoms at the mercy of their will. But the love just won't go away, and neither will the need. I wonder who laid out the variety of clothing, draping chairs and couches with a selection of gowns, suits, blouses, skirts, and pants, with no fewer than 6 different pairs of shoes on the floor beside them. Many of them are gold, either patterned in dusty yellow or trimmed with the colors of Cal's mother. She was a thin woman, judging by the narrow waistlines of her dresses, smaller than I would expect for the mother of the man in the room behind me. I avoid her clothing as best I can and search for something that doesn't carry the weight of a dead woman. I settle for a flowing dress, belted at the waist, dyed a deep, rich navy blue. The colors of someone else's mother. It's velvet, and I'll certainly sweat out of it later on. But the neckline, a gentle swoop below my collarbone, puts my brand on full display. Let Maven see what he's done to me, and never forget what kind of monster he is. I feel stronger as I pull it on, as if the dress is some kind of armor. I can only imagine what kind of elegant monstrosity Evangeline will pull together for the meeting. Perhaps a gown of razor blades. I hope she does. Evangeline Samos excels in moments such as these, and I can't wait to unleash her on her former betrothed, unbridled by any kind of etiquette or scheme. When I finish, I comb out my drying hair, letting it fall loose about my shoulders. The gray ends gleam in the lamplight, sharp in contrast to the brown. I am a strange-looking person, I think as I examine myself in a mirror. A red girl in silver finery never ceases to surprise me. My skin glows golden with the low light, stubbornly alive and stubbornly red. I'm less haggard than I thought, my brown eyes luminous with both fear and determination. I draw some comfort from knowing that Cal's mother, though she was silver, wasn't fitted to this life either. It's written so clearly in the portrait of her, which lies against the far wall, nestled next to a pair of ornate chairs. I wonder where Cal will hang her, out of sight or always in reach. Corianne Jacobs had soft blue eyes, if the painting is a good likeness. Like a sky before dawn, the haze of blue upon a horizon. Almost colorless, drained of a deeper shade. She looks more like Julian than like her son. Both of the same chestnut hair, hers curling artfully over one shoulder, well-dressed, with creamy pearls and gold chain. Their faces are similar, too. Drawn, older than their years. But while Julian's strain has always seemed pleasant, the accepted frustration of a scholar constantly working a puzzle, Corianne's looks bone-deep. She was a sad woman, I'm told, and it shows even in her portrait. Ilara killed her, Cal says from the doorway to his bedchamber. He adjusts the cape draped over one shoulder, clasped in silver and glinting chips of black gemstones. In his other hand, he holds a black crown, half hidden, like an afterthought. A sword hangs from the belt at his waist, tucked into a sheath jeweled in ruby and jet. It's for fashion, at best. No one would choose a sword to fight. She drove my mother deeper into her sorrows, whispered in her head until she had no other escape. I know that now. His lips curve downward, frowning, while his eyes go far away. In his sadness, I see a bit of his mother, the only resemblance I can draw between the two of them. I wish I could have known her, I say.
So do I.
We leave Cal's rooms together, walking the halls of Ocean Hill down to the grander, more public receiving chambers in equal step. Last night, I brushed off any worry of gossip, feeling brazen and bold. The discomfort catches up to me now. I wonder if we'll enter to a rash of murmurs, smirks from the silvers, judgment from the reds, and new bloods. Will Farley sneer at me for wavering? Will she turn her back entirely? I can't stand the thought. Cal senses my unease. His fingers brush the inside of my arm, careful to stay away from the sensitive points of my wrists.
We don't have to enter together, he murmurs as we descend a flight of stairs, growing closer and closer to the point of no return.
It doesn't matter now, I answer. Up ahead, his guards await. Members of House Larilan, cousins of his grandmother's blood. They stand unmasked, unlike sentinels, but just as dangerous and silent. Annabelle stands with them, hands clasped at her waist, belted with flaming jewels, rubies and yellow citrine. She proudly wears her rose-gold crown, the simple band fitted across her brow and smooth, gray hair. Her eyes land on me first.
Good morning, she says, drawing Cal into a quick embrace.
He accepts it quickly and dwarfs her.
Morning,
he replies.
Is everyone ready?
They should be, she says, waving a wrinkled hand.
But I assume we'll have to wait for the Rift Princess to don every piece of metal she can get her hands on. Remind me to make sure she hasn't stolen the doorknobs.
All nerves, Cal doesn't smile, but a corner of his mouth lifts.
I'm sure we can spare them, he says.
You look well, Miss Barrow, Annabelle adds, her eyes flicking to mine.
I don't feel it, I think to myself. As well as can be expected for the circumstance. I'm careful not to use any kind of title, but she doesn't seem to notice or care. Judging by the way her face changes, softening, I must have said the right thing. To my surprise, Annabelle has no enmity for me this morning. She draws a slow breath.
Ready or not, she mutters, spinning around. Here we come, Maven.
The receiving hall at the bottom of the grand stairs is vast, feeding into various ballrooms and the throne room of Ocean Hill, as well as the banquet hall and a smaller, less official version of the council chambers in Whitefire, built to suit a working court of silvers and house the moving government of Norta. Now, reds scatter among the rooms, busy as servants, but noticeably not servants. The green of Montfort uniforms contrasts harshly with the white marble, ocean blue trimmings, and many gold banners still hung from the walls and ceilings. I note red among them, the crimson of Cal's uniform, marking his position as the rightful king and conqueror of nearly half of Norta. As an ascendant, before we addressed the gallery, Davidson wears his fine suit of dark green. Farley has her dress uniform as well, and is still just as uncomfortable in it. I'm glad I don't have to wear one. The gown is soft against my skin as I walk, my feet tight inside fine blue boots. Annabelle leaves us to stand next to Julian while Farley watches us approach. She looks between me and Cal as we move closer to the center of the room. Her brow furrows, and I brace myself for a scowl, if not a snarl. Instead, she blinks, her expression thoughtful, almost accepting.
Kalor, she says,
dipping her head to the king. He grins at her deliberate use of such an informal greeting.
General Farley, he replies, all propriety. I'm glad you agreed to join us.
She adjusts her stiff collar, forcing it to lie flat. The Scarlet Guard is a valuable part of this coalition, and command should be represented when we negotiate for Maven's surrender. While Cal nods his head in gentle agreement, I sigh to myself. I wouldn't be so sure of any deal. I warn her, voice low. I'm getting sick of repeating myself.
Farley only scoffs. Of course, Nothing in this life is that easy, but a woman can dream, can't she?
I glanced over her shoulder, at her various officers hanging back. None of their faces are familiar.
How's Kalorn?
I ask, frowning as shame claws up my spine. I wring my hands together, trying to hide their twitching. At my side, Cal flinches, one hand hanging free. I wish I could take it, but we both refrain from such a naked display of affection. She looks on me with pity.
Fully healed yesterday, but he's taking some time, she says.
I try to picture him whole and healthy, not dancing at the brink of death as he was before I left. It doesn't work.
We've commandeered the barracks at the security center, and he's there with the rest of the wounded.
Good, I push out, unable to say anything more. Farley doesn't prod. Still, I feel the embarrassment of my choices as sharply as a knife wound. Kilorn almost died. Cal almost died. And you ran to Cal. Next to me, the true king looks away, his own face flushed with implication. Even though we both decided not to make choices, we know that choices were made all the same. And Cameron? I add, if only to stem the bleeding of such thoughts.
Farley scratches her chin. Organizing in Newtown. She's a valuable asset there, as is her father. The tech towns have their own underground networks, and word is going out to the rest. Maven Silvers might be preparing for more attacks, but so are they.
That swells me with pride, as well as trepidation. Certainly Maven will retaliate for what we did in Newtown and try to prevent the same from happening again. But if the red slums rise up, if the tech towns go dark, his war effort will all but grind to a halt. No more resources, no more fuel. We can effectively starve him into surrender.
I notice we're waiting for Princess Evangeline again, Davidson says as he joins us. His own contingent of advisors hangs back, giving us space. I tip my head back and sigh. The only constant in this world.
The Premier crosses his arms. If he's nervous, he certainly doesn't show it.
A peacock needs time to groom its feathers, even steel ones.
We lost a lot of magnetrons yesterday,
Cal says, his voice low and stern, almost reprimanding.
How Samos paid a high price for Harbor Bay.
Farley stiffens, setting her jaw. I doubt they'll let us forget it, or fail to make us repay their sacrifice.
That's a bridge to be crossed,
Cal replies. Despite our history, I feel the strange need to defend Evangeline. If it has to be crossed, I say. But we can discuss that later, I add, nodding to the far archway, where Evangeline has just appeared with Ptolemus at her side. The pair of them wear matching clothes of pearly white and bright silver. He has a jacket, tightly fitted and buttoned up to his throat, pants and black boots similar to Cal's, and a gray sash fastened across his chest from shoulder to hip. The pattern on it is strange, but as he approaches, I realize that the black diamond shapes dotting the sash aren't a pattern at all, but knives fixed directly into the fabric. Weapons, should he need them. His sister is equally outfitted, the folds of her long gown slashed to show fine white leather leggings beneath. Should this meeting end in blood, she won't find herself restricted by a skirt. I wish I'd thought of that. Her hair is tightly braided back, the silver strands studded with starry glints of pearl metal, razor-edged, good for cutting flesh. Her arms are bare, no sleeves to impede her movement or catch on the jewelry on her hands. A ring winks on every finger. White stones and black, and fine strands of chain wrap around each wrist. Garrets for strangling or slicing. Even her earrings look deadly, long and tapering to a wicked point. I find myself glad Evangeline took so much time. She's wearing an arsenal.
Shall I have the clocks adjusted in your rooms, your highnesses?
Annabelle crows from where she stands next to Julian,
Evangeline answers, with a smile as sharp as her knives. "Our clocks are exactly on time, Your Majesty."